Boat Trader is America's largest boating marketplace with over 100,000 boats to choose from. We offer simple, comprehensive solutions for those looking to sell, find, and finance new or used boats. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
Welcome everybody to the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast. I am Dale Lucabille. Thank you very much for joining me. Welcome to this week's weekend recap and rant. I have stuff to recap. Yay! Super fun times. I know it's been kind of quiet here as of late, but we're going to get back on track. So let's do it. So this weekend we had club events, tournament events for Loon State Bassmasters, and this would be technically events 3 and 4 of 6. And I missed the first two as I was in Florida taking my captain's course. So I'm kind of starting in a deficit here points-wise. So just as a background, the way our club works is we have 6 events a season, and 5 of those are recorded. So you always have one, like we call throwaway. So either you can't make one, doesn't go against you, or the other way it can be used is that if you fish all 6, but one of those is like super shitty, or your whatever your worst one is, obviously you're going to toss that one out, and then you're going to record your best 5. Well, I missed 2. So no matter what, I'm taking a 0 on one of my 5 recorded tournaments this year, which is going to be a hole to climb out of for sure as it pertains to the angler of the year for the season. So with that said, this weekend we headed down to Wabasha to fish Pool 4 of the Mississippi River here in Minnesota. I have never fished this stretch before, so I didn't know what to expect. I wasn't going to have any time to pre-fish or just scout, even just go boating to see what was out there or how it laid out. No idea. I have no idea what I'm getting into. There are lots of hazards on the river. I mean, you know, floating trees, depending, you know, if there's storms or wing dams. And I mean, just there's a lot when it comes to, there's back channels you can get lost in. Like there's a lot going on at this stretch of river. And I had zero previous knowledge of it. So it's like, well, not going to have time to physically go there, but I'll do my best in scouring the internet and going over Google Maps and just trying to get at least an overview visual of how the lake sets up. And then I cross-reference that with my Navionics app. So at least on there, it shows the wing dams. It took me a while to figure that out. Like, they're just thin lines that kind of jut off from shore. And I was like, oh, those must be the wing dams. But then every now and again, I'd see one that would like went all the way through an island or onto land. I was like, maybe that's a navigational thing. Maybe it's not wing dams. So I wasn't sure. Well, when I finally got on the water, I did indeed confirm that that is what those lines on your Navionics app mean, are the wing dams. Well, it's important for a couple of reasons. It's important because you want to stay in the channel. If you leave the main channel, you're not going to want to run full clip because some of those wing dams extend almost all the way out to the channel. And those things can come up to, I'm just depending on water level, just under the surface. So, yeah, that's going to ruin your day if you hit one of those at a full clip. Lower unit, skeg, prop, and or all, toast. Maybe a hole in the hull. Who knows? Anyways, not good. Just don't do it. Stay in the channel if you're running full clip. And even if you're running slow, be careful. Because I have some experience in reading water. I haven't spent a lot of time on the Mississippi River. I've spent on smaller bodies of water. But I understand what water does as far as shallow water. And you can see, as long as it's not too windy, you can visually see where these wing dams are by the current, because you'll see it riffle as it goes over it. Now, the thing to keep in mind, if you've never been on the river and you're going to the river or you're going where there's wing dams and stuff like that, the action is upstream of where you see the action on the water. And depending on the current and the depth, it can be quite a bit upstream. So if you see that nervous water, if you will, that the riffles, you know, just like this is going over rapids or anything like that, that's what you're going to kind of see. You're going to see a change in the current, change in the surface, and just give that stuff a wide berth. And even with that, I still managed to hit, thankfully at very low speeds, some of these wing dams, even with my trolling motor, because the water clarity of the Mississippi isn't all that great. So they sneak up on you. And even a couple times idling around scanning, you're like, oh, it's coming up fast, and you kill the motor, and you try to trim up, but you still like a couple fresh dings in the old skeg there. Yikes. But I managed to not wreck anything day one. So going into this weekend, I didn't have very high hopes of never fishing it before, never being on it before. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go fishing. I know what I know about river fishing on a smaller scale. And from what I understand, it's basically the same rules apply. It's just on a bigger scale. So like how rivers are typically set up, pool, riffle, run, kind of in that order. So you got a deep pool, it comes out of the pool, you get a riffle, and that, which is shallow water, fast flowing water. And then a run, which is like moderate depth, usually in more of like a straight line. And then it dumps back into a pool, and then that repeats itself. It does follow those lines on the Mississippi there, but not, it's just super exaggerated. Like that pool riffle run will take place over miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. And with the construction of wing dams and dams and dredging and, you know, keeping channels open and stuff like that, it doesn't necessarily play by nature's rules as pool riffle run are into play. Anyways, I'm getting sidetracked. So anyways, I had enough understanding. I grew up fishing smaller rivers. I was just going to kind of apply that. And I'd gotten some tips, you know, I was pointing in the direction of concentrate on wing dams, and that made sense to me. It's like, yeah, it's a natural structure. Well, not natural, but it's natural for smallmouth bass to want to use that. Now, there are both smallmouth and largemouth in this body of water, and you kind of like got to pick your poison on which one you want to pursue. So I was going to go after brown bass, smallmouth bass. So Saturday morning, got there just in time. We started at 6 on Saturday, and I'm 2 hours away from the river. So alarm was set at 3. I got on the road at 3:30, but had to stop for gas and this, that, and the other thing. And I mean, I got to the landing at exactly the right time. Enough time to drop the boat in, park the vehicle back in the boat, and that was like, all right, let's idle out and take off, which is what we did. I drew first boat, which is great. You know, you always want that pole position, but it didn't really matter because I didn't know where I was going. That would come into play. Like if I had a spot I knew I was going to have to race other people to get to, it was not going to be the case. So didn't really matter that I was first place, but still kind of nice. So I was going over Navionics. I was going over Google Maps. And I had picked a couple spots that I thought looked good. at least potentially, and I was going to go try it out. So I race over to that, my first spot to try. Ease up in there with the trolling motor, and I can see the I can see the wing dam as it's spilling over, and it's kind of crazy. This particular spot, it's like it's shallow, gets really shallow at that wing dam, and then drops. I mean, almost instantly in like 25 feet of water. It was crazy. So I just start whipping baits out there and working it up and over the wing dam, parallel to the wing dam, in the eddy current, downstream of the wing dam, just kind of all over. Well, it didn't take me long. I started with a topwater bait, a spook, and I had a little one chase me, but he didn't hit it. And threw that for a little bit more. Nothing was going. So I decided to ditch that and then picked up a swim jig and was throwing that out there. And like I said, I was going, you know, upstream, bringing it over the edge. I was cross-current it, and I was, you know, casting all over. But it didn't take long, about 15 minutes, I'd say. And I hooked up, and it was nice fish. Over three. I didn't have – so my scale, I went to weigh it. So I get in the boat. I was like, sweet, got one. All right, I caught one way faster than I thought I was going to. I thought I was going to have to, like, run a gun on these wing dams. And so I went to go weigh it, and my scale, battery's probably dead or something. But anyways, it wasn't working. So I don't know how big this fish was, but I'm just guesstimating. I'm like, well, it's over three for sure, I would love to have five of those in my bag. So that goes in the live well. And I keep fishing. I pick up two more. So I had three fish off of that spot. So now I'm really beating it. And I caught two on that swim jig and then one just on a regular, you know, football head jig with a trailer. And I was kind of working that ledge down on that back side of it. And I picked one up that way. And they were decent fish, too. They were 2.5 pounds or so, somewhere in that. Again, I didn't have a scale. What I did have, thankfully, is my cull beam. For those that don't know what a cull beam is, it's basically, you know, like the scales of justice kind of a thing. So there's this handle. It's on like a pivot. It's got two clips on either end. So you clip a bass on one end, clip a bass on the other end. You hold it up. Gravity will let you know which one is bigger. Comes in really handy. In fact, even when I have a working scale, I generally use that because that doesn't lie. You know, digital scales sometimes can be off, or the fish bounces at the wrong time. You lock in the weight, and if weights are really close, it's hard to, a lot of times on a digital scale, like, ooh, which one actually is bigger. Now, that comes into play if you catch enough fish where you're going to start culling. I mean, every ounce counts. Anybody that's tournament fished knows that they've either won or lost by tenths of an ounce. You know what I mean? It can happen, so it's really important. And the good thing about the cull beam is that gravity will not lie to you. You hold that thing up, and I usually use like a horizon, something that's consistent, and then you can see if they're really close, which one is a little heavier than the other. So I was using the cull beam. Well, it's because you got cull, clips. Trying to give some basis for people that may not be tournament bass fishing here. Stick with me if you know what I'm talking about. A lot of people don't. So you'll have like these clips. They used to be like the old stringer clips that actually poke through the skin, but now most tournament organizations have banned the use of those. So you just have like pressure clips, and they just clamp onto the mouth, and they don't cause any harm to the fish. So I made my own. I some bungee cords, some big bobbers. I numbered them 1 through 5. I got like some those cheap. I should do a how to make these videos, because some of these cull clips you buy in the store can be expensive, 50, 60 bucks for a pack. And you're like, holy crap. I'm like, I'm not paying that. So I made my own. Like I said, I had bobbers as my markers. I had little bits of a small bungee cord. And then on the end of the bungee cord, I tied on like clothes hanger, the ones that have like the little plastic clamps on them. So they were super cheap. I just disassembled those and it works. Every now and again, one will pop off. I have a particularly violent fish in the live well, but it's actually worked pretty good. And I think it set me back about $6 for all the stuff I need. So pretty cheap. If you're thinking of getting cull beams and you didn't want to drop a bunch of coin, you can figure it out. So anyway, so I use the cull beam, so I know which, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so I can number them, and that helps when and if you do catch enough fish to start culling, you can, at a glance, know which one to grab, to cull out. What you want, obviously, is to start at the top end, because you want bigger fish. It's a kind of a pain in the butt, but I willingly do it, because that's always the best route, is that now you have to hop your clips down each fish, and so you got to handle each fish again, which it's not really that big of a deal. You just pull up on the line and got your fish. But anyways, it's just another step. So I kept fishing there. I caught three in that spot, and then it kind of dried up, and I fished it for a long time. I probably fished it longer than I should have, because I needed to check off some more water. So going into this event, I didn't really have high hopes. I was kind of using it as a built-in, and it's the reason that our club structures it this way. We always, two of our six events every year are always on the same waters as the state championship, the Tournament of Champions. It's like a built-in scouting pre-fishing event, and it's usually the last weekend we can do it before they have the off-limits period. So that was this past weekend. And I probably spent way too much time fishing that spot, but I was like, well, they're here. I hate leaving fish to find fish. It's like, it doesn't, and there's plenty of water here. I knew there was more. And there was quite a few other clubs fishing the same weekend, and apparently there was a walleye tournament going on. So there was boats everywhere. And so I could see boats around fishing. They weren't necessarily fishing my wing dam, but they're fishing other wing dams I could see pretty close to mine, and kind of wanted to check some of those spots out, but there was always people on it. There was a spot on the opposite side of the river that, like, always, always, always had a boat on it. So I assumed that can be a decent spot, which I did check out on Sunday. It didn't really pan out. But anyways, back to Saturday. So I decided to move on down the line. So I looked at the map, and I could see there's a couple more wing dams just literally just downstream of me. Like, I didn't have to motor anyway. I just kind of worked the shoreline around till I got to that next wing dam. Totally separate characteristics of this wing dam. Slightly slower current. Bottom was sandier. Was shallower on either side of the wing dam. There's actually some grass growing up around it. And with that came a bunch of northern pike, which can be fun to catch, but they're all dinks, and they're really good about cutting your line and losing jigs, which really suck. And every fish you're catching that is not a bass is wasted time. So that was happening. That was fun. Oh, my first spot I caught, so I caught that bass and then caught a walleye like almost immediately after. I was like, what in the heck? But let that go for a moment. I was like, should I keep this? I was like, no, let's go back. So I went to that next wing dam down, was just getting ready to bail on it, and then actually caught another fish and put it in the live well. So now I had four, and kept going. So I'm like, oh, that wasn't that totally different wing dam structure, but worth checking out some more. So I could see another one further down the line, so I went to that one. Again, that was like a shallower, sandier one with weeds, found some more pike, didn't catch any bass on that one, and then decided, all right, well, I'm going to stick to my original plan. I had some other wing dams that I had checked off on my map that I wanted to try. So I picked up and headed down to those, and I was sticking at more the I don't know if this is true, but in my mind, I was like, I think the rockier ones are going to be better. It's stereotypically smallmouth-like rocks. So I went and I had a couple small, so I tried this other wing dam and I caught another good one. So now I had my five, three of which were decent, two had to go. Legal fish, but too small. They had to go. And on the river here, in this stretch, not club or tournament rules, but state regulations for this section of river, the minimum length you can keep a bass is 14 inches. So that new club rules is 12 inches. So now just getting a full limit is going to be a little trickier. Not that you ever want to weigh, you know, those 12 inches, but five fish is five fish. I mean, you want a full limit, even if it's just barely legal. I always, even if I think I'm going to call it or hopefully I'll call this fish, like, the worst thing you do is, like, underestimate, like, oh, that's, I don't even want to weigh that one. Even though it's legal, I'm going to let it go. And then at the end of the day, you only have three fish or four fish instead of a limit. I mean, that's still plus weight in your column. So I don't do that. I get my five, and then I work at upgrading the size. So I had those two that I really, really wanted to get rid of. And one of them was actually a green bass, a largemouth bass that I caught in that first spot. I was like, what are you doing here? So that was kind of interesting. But he was one of the smaller ones too. He was like right at 14 inches. Like, he's going to have to go back. So I kept fishing. I just kept running these wing dams and checking spots and would pick up one here and one there. And I had a pretty good morning up until about, I'd say about 11 o'clock. And man, did that bite just die off. Ran around, checked some spots. So you can find largemouth bass on the river too, but they're generally in like weedier areas. People frog, like, it's real shallow and scuzzy. And I tried that Saturday real quick. And I mean real quick. Like, I don't know, I threw it for 5 minutes. I was like, screw this. The smallmouth are biting, let's stick with what's working. So I went back to that, running around. And I think I only caught like two or three fish the rest of the day, and none of them were upgrades. So, like, what I had is what I had. And in my typical pessimistic fashion, right away in the morning when I was getting bit, and I was like, all right, these things are snapping, without having pre-fished this or scout. Okay, technical difficulties. I had my board plugged into my laptop, but I did not plug my laptop in, and my computer decided to go to sleep and therefore killed my audio. So, a little hiccup in this podcast. Sorry about that. So, where was I? I'd called, so my pessimism, I just assumed that other people were catching them as well. And so I was like, gotta get rid of those two little ones, which I did. And so everything I had a decent average size to it. My smallest ones are probably, you know, right around 2 pounds, maybe a hair over. And then they had that one decent one. And then my second biggest wasn't that bad either. But at that point, they were all smallmouth. So, day's up, head back to weigh in, and, you know, of course, you get there, you start, how'd you guys do, this and everything? Well, turns out, people were struggling, and I was the only one that had a full bag. So, right there, I was like, well, that bodes pretty well, unless they're holding on to three giants, 3 5-pounders. I think I've got this one. And, sure enough, I put my fish on the scales. I think I had like 13 and a half pounds, something like that. 13.7. I don't remember what it was. It was over 13 pounds. And so I had big bass for the day. I think that was at 3.7 and change, something like that. So a nice fish. So I took a first place finish for my first event of the year for the club. But again, like I said before, I was in a deficit with the zero. So that's huge. Like, getting those first place points, that's going to help a lot. Now, in talking with, the other people, they're like, you know, we always share some information. You know, we don't give away full-on spots in that. One of the reasons I like my club so much, because obviously we're competitive with each other, but ultimately we want to send people from our club to state tournament to make the state team. So we share information. We want, you know, the high tide rises all ships, right? So we want everybody to do well. So we share some information. And in talking to, you know, I told people what I was fishing, wing dams. And then I was talking to Shark, and he was like, oh man, I didn't even think really was going to do wing dams, because he was pre-fishing and he had found some stuff out deeper, and he was catching 3 and 4 pounders, you know, using a Ned rig deeper. And he said today it was like nothing but little ones and sheephead out there. I did check out a rip rap. I was like, well, I want to check off some rip rap shoreline, which can be good. And I caught a couple real small ones. I'm talking like 8 inches. And I hooked a sheephead on a crankbait, which is the first time I've ever done that. Like, didn't snag it. Like, he legit had the hook in his mouth. It was crazy. So anyway, he was catching a lot of sheephead on his Ned rig, which that's not unheard of. But he was getting really frustrated because his fish had left. So I was thinking, well, maybe I should try that. I'm like, and he was doing that last night. It's like, that's how quickly the river can change. So just because what worked for me today might not necessarily work for me tomorrow. And so Sunday we had our fourth event out there, and my game plan was to go ahead and try that same spot, same philosophy, see if it holds up. In a perfect world, I'd get my five really quick, and then I was like, okay, five should be, no matter what size, five should be good enough to, if not win it, at least be competitive, get good points. I'm going to use the rest of the day to kind of explore the river and learn more and get some backup spots for the TOC. So I pull up to the spot, cast out there, and within 10 minutes, I hook up to a decent one. And I get it in the boat, and I was like, "All right, here we go. We're off to the races. It's gonna be this is a good spot. And this is gonna work well." Well, that was it. That's like the last fish I caught in that spot. I didn't stay there too long. I didn't try to milk it out. There wasn't as much traffic around that day, so I was able to go explore the other wing dams in the area that I wanted to the day before, and check them out. Didn't catch anything on those, but at least I know it's not that there won't ever be fish on those. They looked actually pretty fishy, but I didn't catch anything there that day, but it was good just to kind of learn the lay of the land, if you will. Then I went over across the river and I checked those spots that had been really busy the day before. Nobody was over there. Didn't catch anything over there. Like, my morning was slow. I had one fish in the boat. And so I happened to pass the other Dale in the club. And so we stopped and I was like, "How are you doing?" He's like, "He had three." And I was like, "Ooh, I only got one." I was like, "Oh crap. All right, well, it's not good." But we got a lot of daytime left. Like, I was like, I think it was 9 o'clock at this point. So I went to another spot that the day before, it was a real shallow spot, rocky, and I'd seen some bass up there, real shallow. I saw them when I went to go retrieve my bait that got stuck in the rocks. I was like, what? A, what are you doing so shallow? B, why didn't you bite my lure, you jerk? Because it's one I would have loved to have in my bag. It was definitely a keeper. And so I went and hit that spot, and there was a bunch of little ones breaking, but I couldn't catch anything decent with what I had been using. So I was like, well, going off of what Shark said, maybe they slid back deep again. So I tied on a Ned rig, backed off a little bit, started working that drop, and then set the hook. I was like, oh, I hope this is a bass and not, this is a good one, and not a sheephead, you know, which I was like, probably is a sheephead. It was fighting a little bit different. I bring it up, it's a freaking northern, and it was decent sized northern too. Oh, that was the second big one I had hooked on. I hooked on another one at a different wing dam earlier. I was like, oh my God, you're killing me. I wasn't expecting to pick up northerns on these wing dams. You know, you see some weeds, yeah, sure, but these were out like just in the rock. But yes, there's bait out there, so it makes sense that they would be there. So I caught that, somehow didn't get bit off, which is crazy because he had that bait choked. It was way down in their line, running over all his sharp, nasty teeth. It was crazy. So it was not the big smallmouth I was hoping for. I think I actually caught two northerns in that spot. And then finally set the hook on one, and it was a keeper smallmouth. So, all right, I got two. I got a long ways to go, right out of time here. So it got to a certain point. I was like, all right, I need to either, at this point, I already talked to Dale. He had three. He's probably got his five by now. The bite has changed. So what was working for me is not working today, which could equate to what wasn't working for other people yesterday is working today. So again, I'm assuming other people are catching fish, and I'm like, you know what? I think it's time to explore. I got my first place yesterday. Got to look big picture. Let's think TOC. So I decided to go explore, and so I just took off running down and looking at the map and checked some, you know, visually just kind of scanning some wing dams at the way that they looked. And as I went downstream, all of a sudden I look over and see this big, massive, just bright green area that just like screams largemouth bass. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go in there and try that. So I pull in there and grab the frog rod out and start, and I worked along this one edge and went over some really good looking water. Nothing. I was like, oh, man, where are these? Because some people were getting them on frogs yesterday. I was like, where are they getting these bass at? I get kind of the end of this, and all of a sudden I have a blow up. Set the hook, bring them in, legal fish. Sweet. I got three. We're getting dangerously close. And it's like, I was just about ready to write this entire giant swath area off as like, oh, they're just not in this. Because, I mean, I threw that frog into some really good looking water and just nothing. So I decided to keep fishing, obviously, after I caught that fish. I went around and was fishing like the inside of it. And then I swear, some of the same water that my frog had been in, suddenly now I'm getting blow-ups. And I'm seeing activity in there. So, and it didn't take long. So I caught that one, caught another one, and another one. Boom. Just like that, I had my three fish. I had five. I was like, nice. Got my limit. I'm like, now the pressure's really off. Like, I don't know if it's – they're not really big, so it's probably not good enough to win. But if anybody else is struggling like they struggled the day before, it's like five should carry me. At least get me decent points, you know, maybe top three or something like that. And so I kept going. I had a few more blow-ups and didn't get the hook set on them. Set the hook on this one. It felt like a really good fish. I had it on. I'm like trying to pull him through the big weeds. And then I think he just got caught up in too many weeds. And the hook just popped out. And that was a bummer because that would have been a nice upgrade. Because one of my fish was like 14 and a quarter. So I really wanted to call that one out. But didn't happen. And then this bay went way back, and I could see like a beaver house back there. And sometimes those beaver houses can be money for big bass, because with all the wood and the sticks, and the beavers usually have it dredged out a little bit deeper. Panfish like to hang around that, and so therefore the bass like to hang around eating the bluegills. So I kind of fight my way, because kind of scuzzy to get back there, but then opened up and it was clean. I fought my way back in there, and yeah, I didn't catch a damn thing. Didn't even get a blow up. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna fish this water that I had those blow ups on my way back out. Hopefully I can find another one of those big ones. Well, that didn't happen. I didn't get a single. I think I had like one or two boils, you know, that kind of swing. They didn't really commit to it. But yeah, I didn't catch any more fish. And then I finally got out of there, and I had about an hour left. I was like, what should I do? Should I run all the way back up to my first spot? Keep plugging away there, see if I can't just try some different things, see if I can't elicit another bigger smallmouth out of there, or should I keep looking? I was like, wow, with only an hour left, let's just do that. So that's what I did. Ran up there, didn't catch anything. In hindsight, kind of wish I would have kept exploring the weedy frog bite for largemouth. So as we got back to the landing again, you start talking. So I run into Dale. And I go, well, did you get your five? He's like, just those three. Or I think he had four. Was it either three or four? I was like, oh, man, I thought you had those three so fast. I thought for sure you're going to have five. And then other people didn't have their limit. And I was like, well, might have a chance again. So I talked to Noah, and he had his five. And he sounded pretty confident on it. And I was like, well, if you have five decent ones, then you're gonna have beat me for sure. He's like, yeah, I got one really good one. I was like, ah, yeah, he beat me. So we go to the scales and weigh them in, and Noah and I were the only ones that had five. So going back to that, getting five is just super important. It's extra weight. So my fish weren't big. I was like, I think I have 10 pounds. Not quite sure. And I had like 10 and a half pounds. And then he had 13.4 pounds, I think. And I think his big bass was 3.4, I don't remember, something like that. Anyways, nice fish. And so he took the first place on Saturday. So congrats to Noah. You did a good job. You just stuck with his frog. He kind of did the opposite I did the first day, where he was frogging and then he tried the wing dam on Sunday a little bit, and he just had no confidence. And he's like, ah, screw this. And then he went back to frogging, which was, in hindsight, the best play, because the wing dams were just not, at least for me, they weren't producing. So really kind of wish I would have gone to the green earlier, but that's all hindsight, right? But it's good knowledge to have. And I'm glad that I fished it as much as I did. So now going into TOC, I kind of have a good understanding, you know, A and B plans, you know, kind of a thing. But really for TOC, you need A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I. So the first day was somewhat similar to TOC. Not really, because there was multiple clubs out there. I'd say there was probably 50 boats plus, and the TOC is 100 boats of the top anglers. So it's a totally different animal as far as I can do well on this club events, but that doesn't necessarily carry over to the TOC because you're dealing with 100 hammers out there. So fish are more pressured and spots are going to be taken. And yeah, so anyways, pretty happy with the way the weekend shook out for never have fishing those waters or even being on them to take a first and then a second place respectively is that's huge. And that great for my overall point standings. I'm sure I'm still either down towards the bottom half or middle of the pack because I got that zero lumen over my head. So the next two club events are going to be in September. So got a ways for that, and I'm going to have a strong showing on those. I'm pretty excited about those, though, just because I think they're going to be fun. We're not doing it MLF or Major League Fishing style as far as we're wearing every bass, but what we are doing is they're going to be surprise lakes. So we had already voted put areas of the state in a hat and drew out, and like the Grand Rapids area, Deer River got picked. So that's where it's going to be. There's a shit ton of lakes up in that area. So I don't know how we're doing it the morning of or the night before, but we're going to throw lake names in the area into a hat, randomly pull one out, and that's where we're going to go fishing. So no real pre-fishing for that either. So that'll be fun. And there's some really, really good lakes up in that area. So that's going to be a lot of fun. That's in September. So coming up and be like in 2 weeks is the TOC. So I'll be back down in Wabasha. Hopefully patterns don't change too much, but man, a lot can change in that river. If suddenly we get a shit ton of rain, the water level comes up, that's going to change everything. But even as the day goes on, like you'll notice the current ebb and flow because like upstream, if they open up a dam or downstream, even open up a dam or a lock to let barges through, well, obviously you're going to get an influx of water in and out. So it's like, it's kind of interesting when you're on it, like you'll notice, you know, cause if you're running into the current with your trolling motor, suddenly you got to use more oomph to go as that current just all of a sudden starts flowing faster. And I would think that would play a role in it, just almost like tides on the coast. Fish like current. So they use that to their advantage for sure. It's another something to tip or trick to kind of keep in the back of your mind when you're out there, if anybody ever goes down there to fish. So something I'm going to try to be aware of for sure. So that was a good weekend. Congratulations, Noah, on first place on Sunday. You did a good job. What else is that? That's pretty much what I did. That was my weekend. So, and it was a good weekend. I was pretty happy about that. So there's your weekend recap. For your rant, it's not really so much a rant. So I read an article apparently in northeastern Minnesota, the Fond du Lac tribe is looking at reintroducing elk, which is kind of cool. So Minnesota has an elk population in the northwest part of the state. It's pretty small. It's only like, I think 200 animals or less. I think that's what they like to keep it at. When it gets above that, they generally have a pretty regulated hunt for it. And it's a pretty high percentage hunt if you can get drawn. It's like a lifetime thing if you get drawn as a resident. Only residents can apply. So that's kind of cool. I haven't tried to get it, but it would be pretty sweet. So now they're thinking about getting another population started in the northeast part of the state, not all the way in the Arrowhead. It's northern Carlton County and southern St. Louis County, so basically straight east of Duluth a little bit for anybody familiar with the state of Minnesota, or you can do a quick Google map search and you'll see what area that we're talking about. So they, and I did a little research on it, and the U of M has been doing some studies too to see if, you know, environmental impact, public input, and all that kind of stuff to see if they can do it. So what they're going to do, and because CWD is a thing, they're not going to release like any captive elk or anything like that. They're going to take some from that northwestern Minnesota herd and transplant them over that way, which probably is a really good way to do it. Those ones are going to be acclimated to our climate. They're CWD free as far as we know. And it's from a CWD free area. Like there haven't been any cases in deer in that area to put over there. One of the things, like I'm all for it. I think it's cool. I think the more biodiverse we have of large mammals is a good thing. So that's going to be pretty cool. So the one thing I was like, well, okay, it's far enough south. I don't think they're really going to compete with moose. Not that they really live in the same habitat anyways. But I was curious to see if, because one of our problems we're having with moose in this state, our numbers are declining. And while some might want to blame wolves, I don't think wolves are the problem. Obviously, they do eat some moose. It's pretty natural. But moose and wolves have been living together for hundreds of thousands of years, so I don't really think that's the issue. In fact, I pretty much know it's not the issue. You start looking at some of these studies that they've done. What they're finding out is actually brainworm that is killing these moose, and they're getting that brainworm from white-tailed deer. So white-tailed deer have it. It's just something they live with. Their immune system is built to handle it. It doesn't really affect them unless they're weakened by some other reason, then that can take them down. But for the most part, brainworm doesn't kill white-tailed deer. However, it does kill moose. The moose do not have the natural defense system in their bodies to take on that brainworm. So where whitetail and moose collide, that is a problem. And so kind of the way it works is this parasite hosts in, I think, the larval stage is, I'm probably going to butcher this, but it's deer get it, they eat like slugs, inadvertently eat slugs that are on like the vegetation that they're eating. That gets into the digestive tract. From there, it spreads out, attaches to the brain, and then they poop out the eggs, I believe. The slugs come by, eat the poop, turns into the larval stage. I think that's what it is. And then the cycle repeats. So that's kind of the life cycle of these brainworms. Well, where deer and moose collide, their deer and the moose are eating kind of the same thing. So the same, a moose will incidentally ingest one of these slugs that is infected with this brainworm, and then that life cycle continues. But like I said, they don't have the natural defense to fight it. So a lot of times they succumb to it and it kills them. And that's what we're finding out is kind of hindering our moose population. So I was curious if elk would be susceptible to brainworm, or if they're one of the species like white-tailed deer that could just handle it. And what I found is, yeah, no, they can't handle it. So it's definitely going to, I haven't read anything about it in the articles about the introduction of it. So I kind of feel like if there's any truth to the brainworm thing with moose, which I believe it is, will there be an impact, and what impact will there be in the efficacy of reintroducing that herd of elk? So I guess I wonder if there's much brainworm in that northwestern, around that northwestern herd. That would be something. I went online. I just couldn't find much about it other than learned more than I ever thought I needed to about this brainworm. Other names, meningeal worm, or I'm going to butcher the shit out of this one. Paralophostrongus. Wait, nope, already screwed it up. Paralophostrongilus tenuus. Jeez, Louise, that is a mouthful, but that is the brain worm. So, yeah, white-tailed deer are the normal definitive host for the brain worm. But it can also affect moose, elk, caribou, mule deer, fallow deer, bighorn sheep, pronghorns, domestic sheep, goats, llamas, camels, guinea pigs. All right, so be careful. If you guys got pet guinea pigs, don't just let them frolic out in your yard if you got white-tailed deer around, or they might die of brainworm. Not kidding. So, kind of weird. So anyways, I'm just wondering if that's going to have an impact. And like here, management prevention of brainworm disease can be controlled by reducing white-tailed deer populations in regions where they share habitat with susceptible species. So that's kind of something that I've mentioned on this podcast before. this would be a file this under unpopular opinions, but if we really want to see the wolf numbers recover, or wolf numbers, moose numbers recover, and we're going to try to reintroduce elk to the northeast part of the state, in my opinion, if brain worm is indeed what is killing these moose and will likely then impact these elk, I think they need to make, like, they need to zone as far as how they manage the northeastern part of the state as, like, not whitetail zone. So it's managed for moose, managed for elk, which means they should probably have a really aggressive management plan for deer. Give a shit ton of tags away. You want people to kill as many deer as possible because you're going to want to reduce that population. You want hardly any whitetail deer up there so that the moose and the elk can fill that void. The deer hunters are not going to like that because they already bitch about the wolves up there, and they think the wolves are killing all their deer. But there's still plenty of deer, and there's more deer up there than there ever have been, because the more land you clear for ag and forestry, like, that kind of new growth is like perfect habitat for deer. They just explode in that. And that's also why the moose are running into the deer, because as deer populations encroach, because we're making better deer habitat than moose habitat, they're coming into contact with these deer, and that's how that brain worm is getting passed on. You see a lot of climate change stuff, like, oh, it's because of global warming. I don't necessarily think that's the case. Moose numbers in Maine are doing fine, and we're on the same latitude as they are. In fact, their winters aren't nearly as severe as our winters, so I don't really think that holds up. The weird thing is that, like, the moose population in North Dakota seems to be doing okay, and they got tons of deer out there too. So I don't know if it's just more prairie-like, if they have less, they don't run into each other as often, or maybe the population of white-tailed deer in the Dakotas don't have as much brain worm. I'm not sure. So there's a lot of information out there that we don't have. I'm always somewhat disappointed when I do a deep dive on some of these subjects, the lack of stuff that I find. But anyways, that's all I got to really say about that. That's my opinion. Reduce whitetail numbers in northeastern part of the state. I'm definitely for reintroduction of elk. I'm definitely for getting moose numbers back to a healthy enough population where we could pursue them. That would be preferred. And right now the population just, it's not there. Can't support a hunt. So something should and needs to be done with that. And in my opinion, sounds like let's go get those deer. So, all right, that's what I got for you guys this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to share where possible. I've been getting some messages lately. I love that. I will respond to any and all messages, whether you slide in the DMs on Instagram, @FullScale_Outdoors, or @FullScaleOutdoors on Facebook. You can just shoot me a message, send me. I've been talking to a few people on Snapchat. I'm just Dale Luganville on Snapchat. So anyway, you can get a hold of me, ask questions. I will gladly answer. If you just want to shoot the shit, that's cool too. Share some pictures of what you've been doing in the outdoors, hunting, fishing, all that. We're getting dangerously close. It's July, August, boom, September, middle September, the archery season in Minnesota opens. So I'm starting to feel guilt about not shooting my bow. So it's going to be time to start brushing up on that. And it seems weird to think about, but it'll be here before you know it. Goose season will be here. So it's just going to get busier and busier and busier. Keep that in mind. Start dusting off those decoys. Start practicing that bow. Get that. Got to stay brushed up on all that stuff. So in the meantime, I still got a shit ton of fishing to do. So I hope you're all as busy as I am, having a great time out in the outdoors. Be safe, everybody. And whatever your passion, pursue it full scale.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
You'd think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But As I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.